Roll up, Reading FC are officially doing the business with a 3-1 win over Bournemouth on Friday night, counting as not only a huge victory against a rival, but also opening up a chunky gap between the Royals and the playoff chasing pack. Welcome to episode 251 of the Tyler Esten podcast with your host, Mark Mayo. Hope everyone enjoyed the 250th episode, our interview with Nicky Forster, which is online now. If you've missed that, do get involved. It was a really good chat with Nicky, the former Reading striker. But of course, today we're going to be talking about that win over Bournemouth on Friday night. And I've got an absolute troubadour of the Tyler Sten's finest Reading minds to be doing that with me. First up, the man behind the view from the Dolan, it is Ben Thomas. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, amazing, really. It's you know, talking off air, it's quite incredible to think that we are where we are, you know, considering 12 months ago. So, yeah, it's exciting times at the moment. So, very glad to be here talking about it today.
And the man behind the match preview for the Tyler Sten, Adam Jones, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad, thank you. A bit tired today. Didn't get to sleep until about 3 a.m, but I'm not hungover, so that's the main thing. But yeah, as Ben said, what a performance yesterday. And no, fantastic. So yeah, I'm happy as well to be discussing it today.
Brilliant. And no relation, but the man behind the player ratings for the game last night is Will Jones. Certainly a man who we've had you on the podcast probably more back in the day, Will, but it's brilliant to have you back. How's it going?
Good, thank you. And it's nice to be back sort of discussing not just just a good win, but, you know, just really enjoying the season. And then sort of yesterday was just sort of another, you know, wow moment that so much we've had this season already.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we go on to the recap then, as ever, a big thank you to ZCZ Films, our sponsor, and to Patreon subscribers who continue to help us out in little ways every now and again, which we really appreciate and certainly hope that translates into the quality of the podcast. Well, there's certainly no doubt in the quality of the football at the moment. I feel like that's a little bit Partridge-esque, so I apologise for that. But let's go on into the recap then and talk about Reading's 3-1 win over Bournemouth.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So I suppose there's not really much place to start other than the goals, really. The first half performance from Reading absolutely flew out of the blocks. It took us until the 24th minute for Josh Laurent to get the first goal. And really, I mean, Ben, let's talk about this one first. It was an Elise set piece. McIntyre wins the header. Then he manages to get a shot in. Laurent pounces and just probably... We didn't know it at the time, but a real forebearer of what was to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think that ball kind of seemed to catch Bournemouth on the, kind of out of nowhere, really. They weren't very well prepared for it. And the ball did fall kindly to Lauren. But I think what we've talked about time and again with Lauren is kind of his, his awareness from box to box, really, in terms of protection that he offers the back four, but also getting forward as well. And I think in recent games, we've seen him and you know, Runamoto kind of push much further, and he thoroughly deserved that goal. And it was almost like instinctive striker finish, really. He just poached on it, and that was that. And you know, as we'll talk about, there was really only one team that was going to win it from there. I thought we should have scored before that with the swift effort just before. Who had an outstanding game yesterday too, but. I think realistically it did set the tone for the game, and they were very, very quick to come out of the blocks in terms of attacking Bournemouth. And I was just really pleased overall with the fact they seemed to learn the lessons from that horror show in November, really, because, you know, the last time we played that well was probably Bournemouth away in that first half and then obviously collapsed second half. So it really was a great start. Good to get that goal fairly early on, and obviously just went from there in terms of the positivity and the strength of performance.
Yeah, it was amazing, wasn't it, how the first 24 minutes, they were kind of even. I felt like Reading did have the better of it, as you mentioned, that swift chance that Lucas Shaw pounced on a back pass that was nowhere near anyone, really. He turned it back to Swift, and I think Swift had more shots than anyone else in the game, actually, but only got one on target. His finishing is a bit dodgy, but we can kind of put that to one side for now. And 24 minutes, as I say, for the first goal, then 31 minutes, the second one, another set piece, a little bit different, Elise on the ball again. Spilled really badly by the keeper, quite frankly, a really poor parry. But you sense, maybe, Will, there was a sense that Reading had planned this, because McIntyre was straight onto it And again, he was very involved in the goals, had a great performance all round. But to go 2-0 up on 30 minutes, it was absolute cruising for Reading, wasn't it?
No, you're right, Mark. And I think the goals sort of epitomised the performance, because there was just sort of, you can see the belief in the squad, but they were sort of so aggressive in the way they were attacking and defending. And that was one of the things that really impressed me, was just how much quick they were pressing them. And that just sort of, yeah, it showed in both the goals. As soon as there was the second ball, we were the first on it, quicker, and in both ends as well. And McIntyre is becoming a real threat going forward. And, you know, Every game I watch him, it's not just in the air. It's, you know, if you think of that goal he scored a few weeks ago with the lovely corner routine, and it's been done again. Yeah, you just sort of see him growing in it. And yet it's not sort of the obvious, because normally in the Championship, when you think of like central defenders who are going to cause that threat, it is, you know, it's Sean Morrison. It's the sort of physiques types. But McIntyre's really growing into it. And it was a good set piece from Elise, and it's that sort of thing. I guess if you get it on target with a lot of power, then there is the chance that the keeper will make a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. Belief is such a good word, and with McIntyre as well, I'd have to say that it's sort of it finally actually feels like the club have been talking for years. I almost feel this goes back to the kind of build, evolve, succeed era of the academy coming through, and they were always saying that they're trained to play the passing football, they're trained with the technique in mind. And perhaps now, with players like Tom Holmes and Tom McIntyre, we're actually finally seeing that bear fruit, because I don't think it, certainly the players we're bringing through before, you could say, oh yeah, Aaron Coole had that, but that's kind of the player he was anyway. But as Will says, you wouldn't expect it to Tom McIntyre to be that sort of player, and yet he is, and it was brilliant to see him involved in both goals. The third goal, no doubt, was certainly the most beautiful. Omar Richards winning the ball. Swift and Ajari are kind of knocking it between each other through to Zhao. He basically cancelled Steve Cook and then finished it. Adam, this was, as I say, definitely the most beautiful goal, wasn't it?
It was sensational and something that we definitely needed, because, as you said, we went 2-0 up earlier on in the season against Bournemouth at the Vitality and completely lost it and capitulated. So after that second goal, even though we did get that second goal, I was like, yes, we definitely need that third goal now to make sure that we're in good shape for the second half, especially when you saw that the likes of Jack Wilshere, David Brooks, Adam Smith came on at half-time. It just goes to show how important that third goal was. But again, it just summed up Bournemouth's first half. It was another mistake where Richards intercepted. Ajari actually looks really comfortable alongside Swift, looks more comfortable than with any other player, I think, and it just sums it up, because they, you know, linked up, and then Zhao, what can you say about him? I mean, he just sent Steve Cook back to the seaside and then slotted it in the corner, and it just goes to show how much of a complete striker he really is. He can do it in the air, he can do it with his feet, he can do anything. So I think it summed up our first half performance and summed up Bournemouth's first half performance. And after that, I think Jason Tindall on the sidelines just looked absolutely in disbelief. But credit to us for going 3-0 up, because that was an absolutely vital stage in the game where we needed to continue to assert our dominance against a good side, a recently relegated side. And we've managed to do it. So fair play to them.
Yeah, the thing it may be harsh of me to say, but Tindall very much looked out of his depth in that first half, because Bournemouth, you could see their individualness, certainly in the 50-50s and everything before the first goal. They looked like Premier League players like Billing and Lerma. They were good players, you could tell that, but the team sense between them, I just thought it was completely missing. And in contrast, Reading, Swift and Ajari in particular, I think the thing is, you could say about them, is that Reading got the ball into key areas very quickly. It wasn't really a possession-based game. We had much less possession than Bournemouth, particularly in the second half. But we got the ball to Swift and Ajari quickly. They passed to each other 18 times, which is far more than any other attacking players on the pitch. They had the most passes attempted in the entire Reading team were Swift and Ajari. Quite often these days, it's the centre-backs or the goalkeeper even, because they're knocking the ball around. Reading weren't doing that. They were getting it into the midfielders. Elise wasn't far behind, but he was subbed off. So he wasn't quite at the top of the stats charts. And Will, you said about this aggressiveness, and it seems that Reading, they just knew where to get the ball, how to do it, and then what to do with it after that.
Yeah, it was right throughout the team. I mean, I put in the player ratings. The player who really stood out to me on that was just John Swift, and I've not seen that from him. Just every time, it was really sort of, you know, he was really doing, must have done more sprints than he's done in most games. And, you know, once we got it, it was just really quick counter-attack, and it was shown by that third goal. But what's so good about this team is that they can do that. They look dangerous on the counter-attack, but they can also slow it down a little bit. And you feel comfortable when they've got the possession, you know, if it's Swift, Laurent or Inamoto on the ball, or they pass it back to the centre-back. So you just sort of feel comfortable with us on the ball. And then sometimes in the last few years, watching Reading, it's just felt hard when we've got the ball. And you thought, how are we going to score a goal? Just playing football looks hard. Well, for this team, it doesn't just look easy. They look like they're enjoying it. And there's just quality all over. And looking at the goals, the highlights this morning again, I was trying to think, like, which players really stood out? And you start to watch the goals and you think, okay, well, what did a Jajaro do? What did Rimati do? Well, no, what a pass for the third goal. You think McIntyre scored a goal. Well, he's involved in the first one. Richards won the tackle. It's just all over the pitch. You know, even Morrison. Can you imagine Michael Morrison charging forward and dribbling last season? You know, he did it. Confidence, danger. We probably should have scored from it. It really is the whole team just confident and enjoying. And you can see that they believe in themselves.
Yeah, one player that I must say the last week I wasn't too impressed with Ajari against Preston, but it really looked back to his, you know, it's almost, I wouldn't even say look back to his best, such as what we think of Ovi Ajari, but looked good again on Friday night. The stats say that he got 5 key passes. That's the most of any player in the Reading team. He also, I think, interestingly, Ben, most of his passes were in the opposition half. 28 out of the 32 passes he attempted were in the Bournemouth half. And as soon as you get the ball into those positions, you have players like Ajari, they're going to make something happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've made no secret of the fact that I don't think Ajari's had a particularly good season compared to the heights that he maybe hit in arguably a more average team last year. So I think he's kind of been overshadowed a little bit by the, you know, the productivity of maybe Elise and Mate when he's been fit, and obviously Jao as well. So, you know, he has gone under the radar a little bit. I felt like last night Bournemouth just kind of forgot about him a little bit, and he was able to kind of push forward and do what he does. I mean, you know, he kind of ghosts in and out of the game really, and when he does something, you really do take notice. Completely agree with Adam's point earlier about him playing next to John Swift. I mean, John Swift for me is the most complete player that we've got in the squad at the moment for a lot of reasons. I think his attitude is first class. I think the way that he runs the game, you know, quietly but effectively is just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, very, very concerned in the summer when he was potentially gonna move on to, you know, Premier League and Sheffield United were talking about him. But, you know, going back to Ajari, I think what he needs to add now a little bit more to his game is a bit more directness in terms of himself taking shots on a bit more and being a bit more direct in you know, scoring goals, really, to be blunt. I didn't think he was terrible against Preston. But, you know, a few players had quieter games in that game. But, you know, last night, as Will said, everyone was on the front foot. Everyone was pushing forward. You know, even Tom Holmes, you know, fair play to him. He was bombing forward at every opportunity. And I know that you mentioned it on Twitter, Mark, about how many yards Richards covered, you know, to overlap Ajari. Even when he knew he wasn't going to get the ball, he was still kind of making those runs to drag the defensive players out of position to make room for other players. And that's not something that we've seen from the team for many a year, really. And I think, you know, the more that they continue to get these types of results, still unbeaten in the league in 21. So, you know, winning becomes a very difficult habit to lose, really. And the more they keep doing this, the more confident they're going to be and move towards, hopefully, you know, the top two.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw in the second half that Reading had to pull out another aspect of their game because Bournemouth, you know, when they make that triple change at half-time and they bring on Jack Wilshere, who was basically an established Premier League player for years, and they bring on David Brooks, who they say is worth like 40 million quid or something. They've also got Stanislas coming off the bench, who's again been Premier League for a little while. You know that you're not going to win this game 6-0, basically. And I think, Adam, that the defensive heroics in the second half shouldn't be underestimated, particularly given the fact that we lost 4-2 at the Vitality from being 2-0 up earlier in the season. And I think Raphael was very good. Obviously, you know, the rest of the defence did their bit, but it was so important to particularly hold out until at least the 85th minute to keep that clean sheet.
I mean, you went through some of the players there, and I'm just going to re-emphasise this. So we've got Josh King, who was in the Premier League and who was linked with a return to the Premier League. Dan Juma, who terrorised us at the start of the season. Dominic Solanke, who scored a brace against us in the reverse fixture. David Brooks, who, again, is worth, as you said, about 40 million. I thought he was actually disappointing. I can't lie. And you had Stanislas, as you said, coming off the bench. But it just shows you how good we were defensively. And I guess it's testament, really, that we only conceded through a mistake, really, from Lucas Jau. If we hadn't have conceded, I would have said the second half performance was just as impressive as the first half. Because of the fact that we capitulated in the second half at the Vitality, to have that mindset to go on and hold on to that lead, I thought was great. And I thought we were going to win as soon as we got to that 60-minute stage. I thought, yeah, I think we've got this in the bag now. But you just never know, because I think a lot of us Reading fans haven't really recovered since the 7-5 loss against Arsenal. So, but yeah, I think it was absolutely fantastic. And you look at the price of that back line. Raphael was a free. Holmes was a free, obviously at Academy. So was McIntyre, come from the Academy. Michael Morrison, free. And Richards Academy. So it just goes to show, really. RFC latest on Twitter put that up, and that's what's kind of brought it to my attention. But I was thinking about that earlier on in the season. And it just goes to show that we don't need to spend a lot of money to actually get some quality in there. And it's a testament to all of them. Even with Holmes slotting in at right back, which is not his really natural position. A lot of people have kind of had mixed opinions on him. But I thought he gives us a little bit extra defensively, especially in the second half when he made that block. I'm not sure if it was slightly with his arm, but hey, we'll take that anyway. But no, it was a brilliant defensive performance right from the very front, really, from Zhao to Lauren. He makes a real difference in there, and Rinomota as well. So the whole team put in a shift defensively, and you can't ask for any more than that, because the only goal we conceded was, unfortunately, from a mistake, and that took the gloss off the performance slightly. But I think we were all too buzzing by then anyway. Although I have to say, I went to the toilet from their consolation goal until stoppage time, and then I was standing up from stoppage time until 30 seconds before the end of the game, because you just never know with this Reading side.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that it's, Ben, that Lucas Jau thing, it was... If I was Raphael, whoever it is that organises the wall, I wouldn't be putting Lucas Jau in the wall again, because his self-preservation was a little bit too high. The way that he didn't just kind of turn his back on it. He genuinely walked about a yard away from the wall as he ran up to take the free kick, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, as a goalkeeper, I probably would have slapped him, to be honest, because you know, as a defensive player, those clean sheets are kind of more important than the goals you score, really, because that's what you know, you pin your hat on. In terms of your job and doing that properly, and when you've got Jau in the wall, he's done that. I mean, I didn't feel like we would lose the game. I felt a little bit edgy when they scored, because they were kind of, that came off the back of a period of them really starting to turn the screw a little bit on us. But I think, you know, we did stand up to that challenge. The goal was the goal. It was a good free kick. It would have hit Jau right in the face, and maybe that's why he moved, to protect his stunning good looks. I don't know, really, but you know, they'll probably have a little bit of laugh about that, you know, this morning and back into training. I just thought it was as close to complete performance as we've had this season. And I think, you know, in terms of the context of this season, it's massive. In terms of the context of the fact that we had that absolute catastrophe back in November when we were absolutely flying and then reached the lowest lows in the second half. But also, you know, as I said in the column, the context of the last few seasons, which have just been dreadful, really, in terms of motivating to go to the games, in terms of trying to stay positive with the club and the players there. And as I said at the start of this, you know, if we'd have been thinking about this 12 months ago, it just would have been a fantasy, really. So I think last night, in terms of performances and overall feel good factor, is definitely one of the highest highs I've had personally as a Reading fan for a long time. I know that a lot of other people felt the same sort of on social media yesterday as well. And you know, after the game, Panovic was very positive, and there's a togetherness there. You know, there is there is a lack of clamouring for new transfers at the moment. And I think that's really important because people know that the players that are around can do the job. You know, we've had injuries, but we've coped. We're still in the mix. You know, we're pushing towards the top end now. We're not going to get relegated. I'll go on record as saying that. And that for me is a great season, considering at the start of the year, we were like, where are we going? You know, who is this guy coming in? We haven't got any players, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it was just a great evening. And the goal itself that Bournemouth scored, you know, I think they can probably have a laugh about that one moving forward.
Yeah, you'd hope so. A couple of other stats to throw out for the defensive performance. Omar Richards with 8 tackles, which was double the next best in the Reading team. And actually, Ovi Ajayi is the player who won possession the most, which is quite interesting. Maybe that's because he was latching onto loose balls or something. But yeah, that's, you know, just an interesting little snippet. The only thing I would probably say, Will, is that we conceded 11 shots from inside our own box in the second half and 8 corners as well in the second half. And that did kind of feel like a bit too many. And maybe it was because we're 3-0 up. Perhaps if it was 2-0, it would have been different. But maybe that was just we were a little bit too, you know, open in terms of letting shots in the second half, maybe.
Yeah, you could say that. I mean, I'm not too concerned about the corner statistics because, you know, I think over the years, stats have proven that corners aren't maybe as dangerous as they can be. And, you know, we're defending well against them. And I think, as Ben pointed out, Ben and Adam have pointed out that, you know, the quality of Bournemouth's team, if you look at it on paper, and their starting lineup costs close to 100 million pounds. You know, if you take that, they should be walking the league, and they've got real quality all over the pitch. So it's not surprising they opened us up a few times. But the only goal did sort of come from a bit of a silly mistake. And the other way of looking at it is, I'm okay with it being a little bit open if it means we can be a bit more dangerous in the counter-attack. We don't want to go completely sort of sat really deep, get men behind, everyone behind the ball. We want to be able to sort of do those counter-attacks. Yeah, you know, we would want to be see a little bit less shots, but we were playing one of the best attacking teams. If we'd had those statistics against Preston, then I'd be concerned. But I'm happy with the way they defended yesterday.
No, it's a good point, actually, because Preston, I think, had 0 shots in the second half last week and we kept a clean sheet. So yeah, no, it's definitely a good point to make. I think to round off the recap then, I'll leave you with Velko Paunovic's quotes in just a second, but one that he said to the press in their news conference afterwards, said that, "For me, tonight is my break. I'm going to make this night go very long, enjoy my beer, play my guitar and review the game. Tomorrow I'll be back again." So I've got a brilliant mental image in my mind of him with a Fender Stratocaster as he lays back on a chair and has the game on with a can of Special Brew next to him. Maybe Special Brew or red wine, I don't know. I think he'd go for something stronger after that. But yeah, brilliant mental image of Paunovic enjoying himself deep into the night on Friday after that win and absolutely fully deserved. So we've got quite a big old mailbag. Remember the days when we got 0 mailbag questions and I had to go scrounging around for people? Not anymore. Let's go into the mailbag.
The perfect performance that we were looking for to have, playing against one of the best teams in the league, contenders, and the team that in the past beat us. So very happy because the reward from this huge effort and fantastic performance is amazing, and I'm very happy for the players to enjoy this fantastic win, and also happy for our fans, happy for our club, for our ownership, because we were looking for a long time to get in this shape and have a game like today. But as I always say, and we have to remind ourselves, a long way to go, 20 more games. We haven't done anything yet. Keep our feet on the ground, concentrate on what we control, and get ready for the next one.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Windermere Dave starts us off then, and just off, you know, basically just off the point that I was making about the shots, he says that, why did the official stats point to a load of cobblers? Anyone reading them would think Bournemouth controlled the game, 62% possession, 19 shots to 18, 5 shots on target to 9, 12 corners to 2. We were superb and deserved the win. Yeah, absolutely, Dave. But that's kind of the thing of the second half is kind of the point that I was trying to make. But I suppose, as Will says, the corners aspect, you know, we kind of deal with corners pretty well. And one of our two corners we scored from. So there you go. Ben Greenwood asking, is Josh Laurent the best player we've ever signed for free? And Salopcast, which is the Shrewsbury podcast, saying, is Josh the signing of the summer? I mean, Ben, in terms of the best free transfers, Adam made a good point earlier that, you know, in reality, John Swift was a free transfer. Michael Morrison was a free transfer. Raphael was a free transfer. And then, you know, the rest of the starting 11, all, apart from Jao and Ajari, were academy. So I'm tempted to say that he's not actually the best free transfer we've made, because we've actually pulled out some really decent ones in the last few years.
I think that I mean, it's a great question. It's a really good question. I think realistically, if we paid 5 million for him in the summer, and he was performing the way that he was performing now, no one would be complaining at all either. So I think you've got to balance that with the fact he was free and his kind of level of performance. I'm going to kind of twist this around a little bit and deem academy players to be free, and say that for me, the all-time free transfer for us was Sigurdsson, because he, you know, the amount of money that we sold him for, his impact in a very average team, you know, the kind of legacy that he left in terms of those kind of attacking younger players coming into the team. So no, not to be harsh on Josh Lauren, although I think he's fantastic and, you know, wonderful human being and all the rest of it. But for me, of all time, if we're including academy players, then it has to be Gylfi for me.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Ben Green was saying, also, how does this team compare to the Stam playoff team? I remember really enjoying the Stam season. He says, I know some others didn't, but this side feels a lot more fun. And that's actually something I was thinking last night, is that this is the most fun team since 11-12 when we won the league. Because in the Premier League, it wasn't hugely fun. It got relegated. The playoff season, or the seventh place season, the playoff chasing season after that, wasn't as fun as this. And then we've been awful apart from that 2017 season. And I just didn't really think it was that fun personally. Just, you know, taking 1-0 wins off Rotherham in the last minute and all the rest of it. So, Will, I don't know whether this team surely has to be, you know, more fun. But in terms of comparison, I'd probably say it's got more quality as well.
There's no comparison. I really didn't enjoy the Yapstam season. You know, given the fact that it had come across the greatest season beforehand, really didn't enjoy it. That even the season, you know, we got to the playoff finals. I remember watching a truly terrible game against Wolves where it took 42 minutes or something like that for either team just to have a shot. We're not even talking like a save, just a shot on the game. It was terrible. It was so boring. And yes, we won, but that was you expect to lose interest and be bored when the team's mid-table, but not when we're in the playoffs. And the quality, yeah, I would say you're right. It's the most enjoyable since the Brian McDermott's promotion in 2012. But in terms of sort of sustained, consistent quality, it's the best since Steve Coppell in charge. This is a better team to watch than the Brian McDermott team. Is not as good yet. We can't say that at the moment it's as good as them as grounding out results. But in terms of quality all across the team, it's the best since the Steve Coppell era.
Yeah, Adam, I don't know what you think about that compared to the Yapstam season, because that, I mean, I'm kind of with Will. That playoff final, in a sense, really does kind of mar it for me. But I remember thinking at the time that we felt a little bit lucky to be there, and a really low-quality championship. This feels like actually quite a high-quality championship, certainly the top sixes. So to be in amongst it, I think, is a little bit more gratifying.
I think there is one comparison in the way that we can't believe that we're still managing to get results, even though we deserve in the wins. I think, because of the fact that the previous season hasn't been anywhere near as good, and that was like it with the 2016-17 compared to 2015-16, the fact that we're getting results, we just can't believe it. So that's one comparison to make. But you feel with this side that we're not going to be found out like Yapstam's side was. I think maybe a couple of signings would help, maybe a winger or two to give us a bit something different, and maybe a backup for Lucas Zhao. I think that would benefit us quite a lot, actually. But no, it does feel, as Ben said, it feels a lot more fun. And I think that's one of the main things, because like Mark Bowen last season, we managed to get some results, but they weren't really, you know, the performance weren't really exciting, were they, at all? And I think that was one of the factors, was why he was kind of relieved of his duties. So yeah, I really do. I enjoy watching this side. Maybe that's to do with the players that we have now, with Ajaria and Elise. But no, it does feel a lot more fun. And yeah, 100%. I'm enjoying this season a lot more. Hopefully we have a similar outcome to the 2016-17, but hopefully we can get a playoff win or something. You know, I keep my fingers crossed.
Well, that certainly the tactical flexibility is certainly a lot better this year, which as you say, gives a lot of confidence. Kieran, Eddie Corr and Mark Fidgey, I'm going to kind of combine all of these questions into one. And basically, it's all about Reading's best starting 11 with everyone fit. Obviously, Mate and Yeardom were back off the bench. Liam Moore was back in the Sky studio, so he's not too close at the moment. Mark was saying that it'd be harsh to leave McIntyre out. Eddie saying, would you rotate between them and between McIntyre and Moore in that defensive position? What would you do when Moore comes back to fitness?
I'm not a great fan of sort of rotating centre backs. And there's a lot to be said for Steve Coppell that if you're winning, you keep the shirt, and you really need that spine of the team, which is why Morrison has been so important. So I would keep McIntyre in there at the moment. I don't think he's done a lot wrong. But we are coming up to a period where it's going to become two games a week, and that's where the return of Mate, Yeardom, hopefully Pushkas, not too far away. You're starting to look at the squad, and yesterday on the bench, and you thought, I'm happy with those subs coming on. And some of the games coming up are not going to be against teams at the top, which not to say them lightly, but I'd be comfortable sort of starting to see a bit of rotation coming in just to keep players fresh.
Yeah, I think the thing is, the centre back Sierra, I definitely think I think you probably do put Moore back in because he's the captain as well, and I don't think McIntyre would mind that. And perhaps McIntyre would end up at left back anyway if we want to give Richards a break. But yeah, I think for the attacking, I actually think the return of Puskas is going to be quite important because Zhao, as we said, I think Ted Norris actually tweeted us in. I'll read this question out now, saying if Zhao stays fit, can we go up? And that's the thing. If Zhao stays fit, it's almost unlikely to imagine that scenario. We need a new striker if he is going to be out for a game or week or two, and Puskas is going to be key in that. I mean, Adam, I don't know about you. I'd probably say that the three we have at the moment is just about the right one. We've teased before about having Mate replace Jaria, but on his performance the other night, I'd probably stay with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that we've actually managed to get some competition as well, because when all the players are back fit, it's going to be fantastic. And I think we're near to full health now. I think Araruna and Moore's missing, but yeah, 100%. I think, for me, I would keep Moore out of the side until McIntyre makes a slip up. I think, I don't know. I think even though he's the captain, I think I would keep Moore out. But if McIntyre or Morrison slip up or do something, then maybe it'll be a chance for Moore to come back in. But that's an absolute credit to Tom McIntyre for the performances that he's put in. On the question about Zhao going up, if we keep Zhao fit, will we go up? Perhaps so. I said to a friend the other day, if we sell Zhao, then we may as well sell Elise, because I think Zhao, for me, is the difference between a top six finish and finishing outside. I really do. I think, as opposed to Swift or Elise or Ajaria, I think Zhao is the one that makes that real difference, because we haven't had that complete striker in years. And for me, I do believe he would be the difference between going up and staying down. And I think he could indeed make a really good impact if he is fit enough, if we get into the playoffs. So yeah, I do agree with that. I think he might be the difference, but who knows?
Callum saying, Rhino went forward more last night. Is he comfortable doing that? More comfortable doing that because John Swift is back. I liked it. I think it gave us new options going forward. I certainly think there's logic to that. I think with John Swift, he gets deep, drops deep a little bit more, gets into the channels, bursts into the box. That creates more space, and certainly more space for Winamoto to get in. And we saw that certainly in the first half, at least, against Bournemouth. And Ben, I suppose this is an aspect of his game that, he's a great box-to-box midfielder, Winamoto, and we can make use of that.
I think Winamoto is generally just comfortable as a football player, regardless of what's going on. I mean, I think the game plan has been tweaked slightly in terms of him getting forward in the last few games. And we saw that towards the end of kind of last season when Bowen started experimenting with different formations and trying to get Winamoto forward, really. I think, realistically, one of the biggest things about Winamoto is just his fitness levels. It just does not stop. He does give away the clumsy free kick every now and again, but he's just temperament-wise, just very, very suited to the Championship in terms of their, you know, doesn't get caught up in the cut and thrust, very composed. And, you know, it's not going to be long before he starts getting on the score sheet a bit more, really, because it, you know, with Lauren starting to chip away at the goals as well, I think Winnemotor is probably going to want to get on the act. And there were times when he was just making those searing runs into the box and kind of provoking defenders into making mistakes and drawing them out of position. So, yeah, I think in terms of Swift being in the team, it does give him license a little bit more to get forward. Whereas, you know, before, maybe he had to be a bit more disciplined in terms of stand back because the other players were kind of pushing on for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Lee. Say, for example, we'll create that sort of space to get forward. And Winnemotor, the thing is, the free kick that went to the second goal was that he won with a bomb forward last night, which was very good. Royal Robinson, how good is our youth system? How do we get more from it and not lose talent? Well, anyone watching the thing is Brentford-Swansea in midweek, Tariq Foss, who scored for Brentford, I've actually noticed that Zach Jules, the old centre-back for Reading, who dropped down to League Two, I think, after he left, is now being linked with a Championship move. I mean, it's certainly, you know, you could throw in three or four other players like that. And what we're seeing at the moment, obviously, you know, how many academy products started on the other night? It was five academy products started, and certainly a couple on the bench as well. So it's doing really well, it has to be said. We did have a little bit of a slump, I'd say, about 2 to 3 years ago, where players weren't quite coming through, and perhaps we've lived to regret that with how those players are doing now elsewhere. Well, in terms of how to get more from it, I mean, if we're in the Championship in this level, I suppose we'll just keep playing these sort of players and that'll be fine. But if we do go up, we have to, I think either way, really, we have to start creating systems of loaning them out to League Two and League One clubs, because that's the one thing that I'd say we've not really had. Certainly you look at the players in the team last night, and I don't think any of those players went on loan to a League One or League Two team, and perhaps that's the thing we're missing.
Yeah, it's not held back. Say Omar Richards, Tom Holmes was in Belgium last year, and that seems to have done him well. I've watched a few games at that level that he was at, and it really is sort of League Two level. So don't underestimate the step up that he's had this season and thriving in it. I think in terms of sort of getting the most out of it in your Premier League, are you actually able to sort of keep these players? You don't have to, you know, a little bit longer. If you stay in the Championship and you're struggling for money, you'll lose these players after 6 months or a year of them playing. I think what's different at the moment is you've got Omar Richards being linked with Bayern Munich. Elise is maybe one notable thing was I don't think his release clause was mentioned last night on Sky Sports, but we know that he is an incredible talent. But I felt sometimes that the academy's maybe been a little overhyped to when, you know, the first team's not been doing so well, and it's sort of been quantity over quality. And you can't argue in sort of looking at the Championship, there is an enormous number of Reading Academy graduates. But when you look at sort of Premier League level, and the academy's been around since 1998-99 period now, it hasn't produced many really outstanding talents. And that's sort of the one thing why it isn't possibly talked about outside the club as being one of the best academies in the country. But hopefully we're starting to see that now. In terms of sort of the next steps of getting into it, I think it's just continuing this thing of where, you know, Tom Holmes is the perfect example. Let's have academy players as the squad players. Rather than, you know, I think Adrian Popper is an example of sort of signings. Let's avoid that. You know, Jack Stacey could have done the Popper job, and we've seen the place Stacey's done. I guess the next challenge for the academy is, if we do ever get promoted to the Premier League, is how can we start to integrate these players coming through whilst we're in the Premier League? Because that's something that, you know, we've not been in the Premier League long enough, but we've not done that yet.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. And that would be the scenario, I think, the kind of League One loans. And being a Premier League team makes it so much more enticing for other teams, and even in the Championship, to take your players. I remember when Alex Pearce went on loan to another Championship team. I think he went to, was it Southampton? And when they're in the Championship and Reading were in the Championship, and they thought, God, these players are playing at the same level as us. And you couldn't imagine, say, for example, Thierry Neves, if he went on loan at the moment, he wouldn't be to Blackburn or Luton, would it? It would be to a Cheltenham or similar like that. So I think that's perhaps something that may change in the future if Reading do well. Fozzie Bear saying, can we get automatic promotion this season? $1 million question, Adam. In terms of at the moment, which sort of way are you leaning towards, either in terms of it being playoffs or top two?
I think playoffs will be a good result this season. I don't think this is me being pessimistic. I think this is just me being realistic, especially because with COVID, I don't think, the likes of Norwich and last night Bournemouth, Watford, they haven't really sold a lot of their best players. So the fact that they can carry on with their best players, I think it makes it a bit of a difficulty to get top two. You could say that about the 11-12 season, where we probably didn't have the squad really to go for automatic promotion, but we somehow got it because of the team spirit. And I can feel that same team spirit now. So never rule it out, but I think playoffs would be a very good result for us this season because anything could happen. You just have to go back to our last playoff campaign where we were favourites against Huddersfield and unfortunately lost on penalties. So yeah, even if some of the teams are stronger in the playoffs and we're there or in and around the promotion mix, then anything could happen. As long as we're in that promotion mix, then yeah, I mean, why not? Why can't we get promotion? So yeah, I would definitely go with playoffs. At the start of the season, I said 16th. So, I mean, fantastic if we get playoffs, and I'm praying that we can, because so far we're looking good for it.
Yeah, I would certainly say that last night showed to me that if we were in the playoffs against a Bournemouth, and obviously we've gone to Swansea and done all right, we've beaten Watford, even when we lost to Norwich, we looked okay. It shows that we would be competitive in that. And it really, I mean, let's face it, it is a lottery at that point. In terms of top two, you just worry that Norwich, as you say, having those teams that come down have not had to sell the players because of the parachute payments, which are, in my opinion, far too high. And therefore, I think Norwich are looking too good. I think Brentford as well. You just kind of worry the team that's lost three games in 24. How, you know, is it likely that they're going to have a big slump or a big enough slump to let Reading in? You know, it's a big ask to get top two. And I think if Reading do it, it's genuinely outstanding. And it's pretty outstanding if we get playoffs. So certainly would be happy with that. Sam Richards saying, how worried are you about not getting promotion and this brilliant squad being broken up? Interesting comment on commentary last night when they said some inside the club believe they should cash in this January due to big FFP concerns in the summer. I think the commentator mentioned that a few times last night, which I found a bit weird. I think they were talking about Omar Richards at that moment, with him being out of contract in the summer. But the thing is about cashing in, and this is that this can be the same for all of the contracts, all the players sort of out of contract in the next 18 months, is that the difference between being in the Premier League and Championship is absolutely vast when it comes to finances. And if if you're a player at the moment, there's no real need to sign any contracts, knowing that that difference will be, you know, either making you very, very rich or making you not as rich if you sign and the wrong thing happens, basically. So I think in terms of FFP, it's not something certainly we as fans can worry about for the next, you know, few months. In terms of the transfer window, I think we can see that Reading are taking FFP seriously still, because otherwise we'd be going and spending loads of money to try and get promoted. This is not a win or bust kind of scenario. But Ben, I do think that obviously there is a chance this squad's going to be broken apart in the summer. Elise and Richards are two players that I think probably would leave if we didn't go up. But otherwise, you know, I think even if they did go, and we probably wouldn't get loads and loads of money if they did, but I think we'd still, you know, it's not a kind of, if this season we don't go up, we go bankrupt and loot and get relegated scenario, is it?
No, I think it's very difficult. It's a very difficult question to answer, because you've always got to see what happens. I think in terms of the current squad, I think they understand the project, and I think they understand the bigger picture. And I think that is evidenced in the way that they play, the way that, you know, when players kind of come on, they give it their all, because they want to get in the team and they want to do the best they possibly can with the minutes they give. I think the difference really now is that the players tend to like Paunovic and the backroom staff, and they see kind of where the team is going. I think you're right about, and we've talked about this many times, about kind of players out of contract not signing contracts. There's, from their personal point of view, there's no point signing those contracts. I wouldn't, as a player. I generally, you know, going back to the point about top two, I generally think we can get there. I think it'll be Norwich and another, and I don't see why it can't be us. I think the only thing that would let us down potentially is a little bit of inexperience in some of the maybe the bigger games and naivety. But, you know, we proved last night that we can mix it with probably the most expensive and best this division has to offer at the moment. In terms of being broken up, I mean, I think the board will be very keen to not completely reset the team, because that was the whole point of this last summer. It's just they did it a little bit later than they probably should have done in terms of organisation. But, you know, I think Paunovic will stay regardless, and I think the players will want to kind of buy into what he's trying to do and what he's been able to do into a very short space of time. So I don't see whole changes in the summer. I think, you know, obviously players will come and go. That's the nature of the business. But I don't see a massive turnover and a massive breakup in the current squad, no.
No, I could agree with that. And the final question of a big mailbag. Thanks to everyone for getting in touch. As I say, I do really remember the days when after a disappointing 1-0 defeat away from home, I'd be sitting here, you know, with a question. So to have so many is great for us. And if you want to send them in to the Twitter and the Facebook and the Gmail as well, thetylersend@gmail.com. Make sure we answer them. Optimistic 08 saying, my question is it ever possible for life to get any better than last night? Well, the thing I'd say to that is hold on for Big Match Preview, because we've got about the next 10 days or so for Reading. It genuinely could get better. So with that in mind, let's do some news bites and then we'll go on to talk about the Stoke game on the weekend.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
I'm well aware that this podcast is kind of getting on for time now, so I'm going to breeze through the news bites. If anyone's kind of hoping for massive transfer news, I'm sorry, because it just isn't any. Niskin Skabano, the Fulham winger, has been linked, which seems like a relatively standard sort of loan deal if we would want to bring him in. Deadline date is on the 1st of February, 11 p.m. on Monday. Keep an eye on the Tylersend Twitter and Facebook and everything to see the latest gossip updates and what actually happens, because really nothing has actually happened so far. So deadline day is basically going to be it. In terms of the other teams for Reading FC this week, women's team haven't played. They're not in action until Man United away on Sunday. The under-23s beat Aston Villa 3-1. Femi Aziz, Ryan East and Thierry Neves on with Thierry Neves, who actually he's been out for months and months and months. On his first game back, I believe it was, scored in that. So those three on the score sheet. So good win for the under-23s. They got West Brom on Friday. The under-18s had a 0-0 draw with Villa, and they're not in action now until the 13th when they play Leicester. So not a bad week, certainly, for the academy teams and certainly the academy players in the first team. But big game on Saturday. It's Stoke away. Let's jump into Big Match Preview and talk about that now.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
So February the 6th, Saturday, 3 p.m. We're not on, why aren't we on TV? I thought we were the new Leeds. I thought this was the idea that all of our games are on TV now. But yeah, Stoke away it is for Reading FC on the 6th. And, well, yeah, it's hard. We're recording this on Saturday lunchtime, so it's a little bit difficult to say for certain what sort of Stoke team we're going to face, because they've got Huddersfield away in about an hour and a half. But they've not won since 19th of December going into that. That's 8 games. So their playoff chances really are slipping fast. Middlesbrough are playing as well at the moment. But so, as we're doing this, so Reading have an 8-point gap to Middlesbrough at the moment. Stoke are further 2 points back. So, yeah, it really means that they pretty much need to beat us, which is not a terrible situation for Reading to be in. It's our latest revenge opportunity, in fact. Will that 3-0 defeat against us back in the days when the season looked to be slightly crumbling apart? But this is a very optimistic scenario for Reading going to the Potteries.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game. I do look at the table, and I think that the best six teams in the league are in the top six. And I'd be surprised if someone dropped out. And I think any of those teams, as I was saying, would be very disappointed. Stoke. Sort of not spectacular. They are just outside the relegation zone. But you look at the sort of the next two games when people sort of talk about automatic promotion. If we get 4 points out of Stoke and Brentford, then I'll start to get really really excited, because I think they're going to be sort of difficult games. And Stoke sort of offers a bit of a different different challenge. I mean, I don't want to sort of jump into the stereotypes of them being tall and long ball, because Tony Pulis has been gone a long time, but they have got a lot of experience and know-how, and they're sort of a bit like Preston, real sort of typical Championship team. They're going to work hard. They're going to make life difficult. But we've got the quality, and that's, you know, hopefully that will come through.
Yeah, Reading actually have a week off, and every other team in the top six is playing between now and the game at Stoke. Swansea actually playing Norwich on Friday night on the 5th, so that'd be quite entertaining, potentially. But with the Stoke game, I think, Adam, you know, we've drawn five of our last meetings with Stoke and lost the other three. The last win was in April 2006, when Sidwell Doyle and a certain John Halls got on the score sheet at the Medeski. So we've not really had the best of fortunes against them. I'd certainly say that, you know, maybe Stoke fans will disagree for the game earlier in the season, but really our games with Stoke have been really boring, haven't they?
They have been absolutely dire. I think, especially at the Bet365 as well, at Stoke, they have been absolutely terrible. I think there was a game, I think it was either last season or the season before, where there was no shots on target. I think Tom Ince might have hit the post, but apart from that, it was a terrible game.
Yeah.
So I think it all kind of sets us up nicely, I think, for a draw or something. But the fact that, as you say, Stoke might need to win this game, perhaps it would be good for us to go on the counter-attack if they're coming forward and throwing everything at us. I think it would be good for us to go on the counter-attack and be clinical again, like we were against Bournemouth. Quick word on John Halls. I remember him. I think he was a left-back or a right-back. He has a bit of a strange career, because I can't remember what he did, really. I think he played for Stoke as well at some point. I think he joined. But I think he's a model now or something, or a fashion designer. I think he's model for Armani. So, yeah, I mean, just goes to show, really. Usually Stella Cruz is a politician in Ecuador. So, yeah, it's ridiculous, really. But
I think I saw John Halls on a poster in Brussels during the week. So, yeah, he is a model. And if you travel the world, you will see him modelling for H&M. So he's possibly the most visible ex-Reading player ever.
I remember Dan for the Tarlhurst End years and years ago did an interview with John Halls. So if you want to go digging back through the archives, then we've got a chat with John Halls on all of that, actually.
But yeah, overall, I think the Stoke games they have been very boring in recent years. Our recent record against them, as you say, hasn't been very good. So it'll be a great chance for us to kind of get revenge, as Velko Pinovic says in Revenge Month, and actually get the win. So, yeah, I think we have the ability to get the win, but we need to, again, be on our absolute top form and actually perform like we did yesterday. Because if we do, then there's no reason why we can't get the win. But again, it's another away game. It's another challenge. A game like Preston, as has been said. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But another vital game like Bournemouth.
Yeah, sorry, I've gone down a complete tangent and Googled John Halls then. The telling thing, the only thing I was going to mention, is that when you Google John Halls, it says John Halls model, not John Halls footballer. So it really has made his mark there. And if you go on certain links with a certain former footballer by the name of Redknapp's ex-wife, actually, as well, which is interesting. But anyway, that isn't the sort of podcast we are. We do predictions for football. So let's do some predictions now. For the Bournemouth game, Handbags is the only man to go 3-1. So he takes 3 points out of that. I had 1-0 Reading, so I got a point from that. None of the other guys actually said we'd win the game, which is interesting. So the table at the moment, Handbags is leading on 20 points. I'm on 18, Westy 16, Ollie 14, Sim 13. For this one, I am going to go for a 1-1 draw away to Stoke. I think that's just the type of game that we end up having on these sort of trips. And Reading, actually, all of our five draws this season have come on the road. So just tends to be how these things go. But it's certainly the sort of game I think can be, you know, a moment of magic or big error can turn one way or the other. Ben, I wonder what you're thinking for this one.
Well, I'm still thinking about John Halls, actually. It's funny because I saw a poster King's Meadow Tesco's the other day, and I thought that looks a lot like John Hall's, so it must be. So he's obviously doing stuff for Tesco as well. So he's got fingers in all. Yeah, he's got fingers in all the commercial pies, hasn't he? Really, but there we go. Right, predictions. I think we'll win 2-0. I don't like Stoke. I've never liked Stoke. Although I'm grateful that they've given us quite a bit of money over the years for very average players that we've sold to them, so that's always good. But I think we'll win, and I think you're right, you know, about the record that we've had recently, that this is the kind of game that we need to win in terms of overturning those records if we want to go for automatic promotion. So I'm going to say 2-0 to us for that game.
Will, what are you saying for this one?
I mean, Stoke haven't actually won this calendar year yet, so we'll see if they do playing today. So I'm going to go for 2-1. I think it'll be a close game, and I'm wondering whether if you ever want to do a competition, Mark, whether, you know, take a photo of John Hall's on your holidays.
Yeah, if you send in any photo of John Hall's that you see about, if you're in the Maldives and you see the. You know, that maybe you're watching, you know, in the hotel, and you have someone saying, "Oh, this is welcome to your hotel," and this is what it's. If John Hall's is presenting that for some reason, then do let us know. We can maybe make a little, you know, like a world map of spottings of John Hall's, which is certainly, I'm sure he'd be interested in seeing that. Adam, then, what are you going to say for the prediction?
Well, I predict that John Hall's will come on at half time to do a bit of entertainment. But apart from that, I think I'll go with the same as you, Mark. I think 1-1. As you said, it's that sort of game. But I think that Yaku Mate could make a difference with Lucas Zhou. I think, as I said many, many times before, and I'll say it again, Yaku Mate gives us that little bit extra. So I'm going to go with the 1-1. But I wouldn't be surprised to see us win again, especially with the return of Mate and Yeardom as well down that right-hand side. I wouldn't be too against, actually, Mate coming in for either Elise or Ajari, maybe Elise, to give us that bit of width as well. So I think that right-hand side could make a real difference if we do decide to go with the Edom and Mate on the right-hand side. But Swift, again, makes that difference as well. Ajari is coming back into form. And then, you know, you've got Rinomota and Laurent there in defensive midfield you can rely on. So yeah, I'm a lot more confident now than I would be under previous managers. But yeah, I'm still going to go for a 1-1 and be pragmatic and realistic.
Yeah, it's not a bad point, is it? At the end of the day, if we take a point, obviously the circumstances, it wasn't a bad point at Preston, but Lucas Zhou missed the penalty, so maybe it was a bad point. So we'll see how the game unfolds. Absolutely be back for next week's edition of the podcast, probably going up around Sunday at some point, maybe Sunday lunchtime, as we review that game that draws to an end, the 251st episode, and certainly one of the most entertaining editions of the Tarleston podcast, I hope. Thank you very much to Ben, Adam and Will for all joining me this afternoon.
No worries, pleasure.
Thanks, lads.
Absolutely no problem at all. Have a good rest of your weekend.
Absolutely. And to everyone who's listening, a big thank you for tuning in. It's been, as I say, it's actually quite nice to have all the mailbag messages and everything like that. So keep them coming, and we will continue to endeavour to get through each and every one of them, and hopefully cover Reading off for you as any questions you have. And certainly it's going to be a big week for Reading season coming up. Transfer deadline day on Monday, potentially a couple of players coming in, but even if not, you know, I think we'll be perfectly happy even if not. And then of course we have the trip to Stoke on Saturday, potentially another 3 points for the Royals as we continue what is actually genuinely, this is actually true, this is properly a promotion fight. This is what it is now. So enjoy it and come on you arse.
Yeah. Christmas gift.